you thumb down to Exodus 24 through 6, this is a passage that I had read in the Amplified form in our last program, Yoel, but there is more to say about it, so I'd like to cover it once again. This is what is called the Second Commandment. It is actually just the heart of Yahweh's introductory statements that precede the seven instructions.
You shall not prepare or produce for yourself, accordingly, a carved image or idol, or a religious icon or object of worship representing any god, or any visual representation of something or a likeness or appearance, a painting or association to anything, which is in the heavens above, the spiritual realm that is on high, or which is on the earth, or the land and the ground below, or which is in the waters beneath the land. You shall not bow down and worship them or speak for them, that is, prostrate yourself in obeisance or homage to them, show any allegiance to them, or prophetically interpret their message, promoting them so as to make their purpose known. And you shall not serve them. You shall not work nor labor in their cause, serving as their ministers, nor submit to them in servitude. For indeed, I, Yahweh, your God, and Elohim in this case, am a zealous and jealous God, a God who is desirous of, even demanding of, exclusivity in a relationship, a God who is emotionally passionate and extremely protective of those he loves. Counting and reckoning, taking stock of and recording, assigning and depositing the perversity and sin of twisting and distorting, as the depravity of perverting and manipulating, deviating from the way, the guilt and punishment derived from delusion and depravity of the fathers upon the children, concerning the third and fourth generations of those who hate and are hostile to me, as abhor, detest, and loathe me, striving maliciously against me, shunning me. But I will prepare, perform, and produce, as actively effect and appoint, offer and celebrate, unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor and undeserved kindness, that steadfast and loyal love, a totally devoted and affectionate relationship, faithfulness and goodness, well, in a relationship, that's good, I guess, to thousands who love, who choose to form a close and affectionate, loving and friendly family relationship with me, and who closely observe, carefully examine, revere, cling to, keep, and are secure in, caring about, and relying upon my commandments, instructions, and prescriptions.
It's Exodus 24 through 6, and every church, every religious institution the world over remains overtly opposed to this divine instruction.
Well, as and also, that whole thing I just read, what it took me like 2 minutes to
right.
crank through there,
right.
is summed up to don't take the Lord's name in vain.
No, not this one. This,
the
next
one
is. No, this one is don't make graven images.
Oh, don't make graven
images. That's it. Yeah,
it's all. I have trouble figuring out where they've distilled things
into.
One,
yeah, this one is, if you were to see this on your courthouse wall, it would say, you shall not make graven images. That's it.
Yeah, you're right, because I was thinking the lifting up the lifeless part, is,
right.
Which we get in the third.
Right. And by the way, on that, I did get an email from one of our listeners who said, you know, does that mean that I, because it also talks about, images of things that are on earth below and everything else. Does that mean that I can't have pictures of my wife, my kids, and my pets around? And of course, I wrote him back and said, you know, when you look in the context, the last line of the first introductory statement was no false gods. And it goes from no false gods to no images related to in a religious context, and then it speaks of don't worship them. So no, he's talking about, you know, if you got a picture of your dog, that's just fine, so long as you're not worshiping your dog. You got a picture of your wife, that's great, but you know, don't create a religion around her.
Talking to you though, the you know, all bets are off.
Yeah, if the dog is talking to – my dog does talk to me. I'm not sure I understand her language. Every morning, 6 o'clock, she's sitting there singing in my ear saying, it's time to feed me. Get up now or I will continue to sing to you. But anyway, yeah, this is an edict against religion. No religious worship. No religious images. No religious icons. No false gods. It's an edict against religion. And then, but that's not even the meat of it. Your point was that the religious institutions are all in this that first codicil of this second introductory statement. The meat of it's what follows, and not one Christian in a million knows what follows. And that is that Yahweh is against Awon, which is twisting and manipulating his testimony, corrupting his word, which is what every English Bible does. And he says the consequence is going to be the burden is going to burden your children and your children's children. If you don't care about yourself, you ought to care about your children, and you're destroying them. And then, of course, he presents the single most important concept in Scripture, his mercy, the concept of undeserved favor, chesed, saying that it's available to thousands who, what? First, avoid religion, avoid worship, who love me as I am, and who observe my instructions, who don't say such stupid things as Leviticus, who cares? You know, the Catholic Church, Yoel, I don't know if you know this or not, but for better part of 500 years, actually removed this, which is called the Second Commandment. It isn't. They actually removed this from the Ten, and they doubled the Tenth, so there would still be Ten. But of course, Catholicism is literally based around religious images. I mean, their crucifix, their statues of Mary, all of the saints that line the walls, all of their sunbursts in their religious paraphernalia. I mean, there is. It's even hard to maneuver in a Catholic church for all of the religious paraphernalia. I walk into some, you know, if I'm touring to other countries around the world, and God, I mean, I break out in hives. I mean, it just makes me nauseous. And yeah, so they actually eliminated this one for 500 years.
I was kind of burned by that when I was having ironically, at our favorite pizza joint there, having a conversation where someone joined in and he said something about, you know, he was asking, you see, he was a little bit curious about, you know, all the things we were discussing. And he said, well, what do you think about then? What's your viewpoint on, you know, the fourth commandment or something like that? And I said, well, you know, which system, you know, which one is that? Meaning, like, which number are you using? I was trying to feel him out to figure out, like, are you one of those that skipped number two? Or,
yeah, right.
You know, whatever. And he kind of, like,
and by the way, they're not numbered.
Oh, yeah, they're not numbered at all. And so I was saying that, one, to try to feel him out to see if he was Catholic or not, and two, to open up the door for the whole discussion about the introduction that I thought the first, quote-unquote, three were, there's no numbering, and how the Catholics, you know, did, you know, what you just said. And unfortunately, he took it as, oh, this guy thinks he knows all this other stuff, and he doesn't even know what the Ten Commandments are.
Right.
So, which is, you know, unfortunate, but it's not going to break me up too much.
No.
That he cut me off at something. He was obviously, for him to, he didn't say it overtly, but you kind of see it in his face when I said that.
Well, you know, the Christianity is overtly opposed to what they would label the first four commandments. You know, absolutely, totally, and adverse to the first four. Completely and totally. I mean, the religion is predicated on animosity to the first four, which, by the way, is why when Paul gave his summary of them, he listed I think four or five of them, and omitted the what we would call the first four, because Christianity and he therefore completely opposed to the first four, and he also omitted "you shall not bear false witness," which was. Is all Paul did. I mean, that was, you know, that comedy show, Here's Your Sign. I mean, that's the sign for Paul, false witness. But Christianity is particularly opposed. The Catholicism justifies its authority to change God's instructions based upon what they call the fourth commandment, which is the one on the Sabbath. And they say that because the Protestant churches have followed their example, it's proof that that they speak for God.
Oh, and that God let them change
right.
the Sabbath from a Saturday to Sunday. I've seen that quoted from many cardinals and bishops and such. So, as proof of their authority, not a sign that their religion is
yep.
you know inconsistent.
Right. Now, with the first part of this of Exodus 4 and 5, the first part of this is tells you. No crosses, no altars, no religious icons, no sunbursts, no religious paraphernalia of any kind, no pictures of saints. It says none of that stuff, and no worship, no bowing down.
No Marys in a bathtub.
No Marys in a bathtub. Nope.
I don't know. That might be a Midwest thing. They bury
yeah,
the bathtubs
so.
Straight
yeah,
up
yeah,
with a Mary
right.
in them.
Yeah. St. Christopher's. As we dig deeper, though, kana is the most telling term in this particular passage, because it conveys just some really marvelous insights into Yahweh's nature, his personality, if you will. And I think a lot of people have a tough time with one of us feeble humans talking about God's personality. You know, that somehow demeans God if you're talking about the fact he has a personality. He does have a personality. He's very open about his personality. This introduction where he says, you know, here's my name, by the way, this is a very telling term about his personality. He says, I am jealous. I'm Kana.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Paul's letter that's read at most weddings, where in Corinthians he says that love is not jealous. Sorry, Paul. No one loves more than Yahweh. And he says he's jealous. Jealous is a reasonable thing to be, in the sense of desiring our relationship to be faithful and exclusive. He's passionate about it. That's why he says in the letter to the Laodiceans, which would be the Protestant Christians, the evangelicals, if you will, today, he says, you know, you have no passion. You're neither hot nor cold, so I'm just going to vomit you out of my mouth. Yahweh is passionate, and he responds to passion. And I mean, look at myself. I'm amongst the most flawed people on the planet. A rascal. But you know, like a lot of the people that Yahweh has enjoyed their company, and David is a great example. Now, I'm not quite as flawed as David. But David was passionate. God likes passionate people. You know, my distraction in life, you know, when I'm not studying the Word and I'm not spending time with my family, my distraction is sports. Now, I like watching sports. I like playing sports. I like watching sports. In sports, I like the characters. You know, if somebody's a character, if they stand out, you know, they got some passion. They're fun. You know, they're interesting. And Yahweh takes the same view. Those of us who are passionate are entertaining to him. And those that are not aren't worth the time of day. He's saying, I'm passionate. I'm Kana. And I'm, by the way, I'm Kana. I'm hostile to anyone or anything which disrupts or threatens the relationship that I seek to form with you, which is why that next thought flows into twisting and manipulating his instructions. So God says that he is a passionate and jealous God, and that he is deeply devoted to committed and loving partnerships. Right here in this introductory statement that he etched with his own hand in stone, Kana lets us know that God can be envious, even angry. And that's important to know. Because I don't think it's possible to be able to express genuine love if you cannot express genuine anger. And to love, to be able to love means that you are able to be angry. And there are things that it's appropriate to be angry about. God is angry with the religious idiots like that minister who's going to try to get people to be devout Christians. Angers him because he's passionate about the relationships he's trying to establish with us. Kana lets us know that God can be envious, you know, and he is bothered when we pander to religious images, illusions, and counterfeits. But that's not all. Kana means this is what one of the reasons why we talk about God cheating, because of the depth of some of these words.
I mean, kind of means like 8,000 things. I'm not even sure you can translate that word at all.
Yeah,
I mean,
but one of the connotations
in our language, I mean,
right. One of the definitions of kana in our into English would be, I am. This is Yahweh speaking. Willing to purchase and acquire you, which is symbolic of Yahweh ransoming us by paying the debt to free us from judgment, separation, and death. Kana speaks of the one who creates, the one who gives birth, the one who brings forth. Yahweh is, not only created the universe and gave birth to life, he's the one who brings renewed life to souls who love him and who observe his word. And lastly, kana is not only the branch, it's also the measuring standard. The branch is a metaphor for the Messiah, and the measuring standard is a metaphor for the Torah.
And doesn't it mean to purchase or to exchange something for something or something along those lines?
Well, yeah, the first. It means kana means to acquire, to
ransom
purchase.
Or ransom.
Yeah, that whole concept is that's what unleavened bread is all about. Unleavened bread is Yahweh ransoming us. For God to be just and yet forgive us of our perversion and our rebellion, the only way he can do that is for he himself to pay the fine. There's a penalty that's required for him to be just. And so he said, rather than you pay it, I'll pay it. That's what Kana is saying. And as a result of me paying it, I can give you new birth. And if you want to understand how I do these things, understand that Kana is the branch, which is the Messiah, and it's the measuring standard, which is the Torah, which isn't surprising since the Messiah is the human manifestation of the Torah. It's living metaphor. It's a symbol. The very thing that Paul was opposed to, which is the association between the Messiah, Yeshua, and the Torah, which he disjoined in his religion of Christianity, is the very thing that Yahweh is intertwining here, saying that they're inseparable. The Messiah and the Torah, Kana, are one. Now, equally important, and we've spoken about this word before, it is instructive to know that awon, which you read as perversity and sin of twisting and distorting, is based upon awa, which is to pervert, to distort, to manipulate, and to twist. It's just always translated perversity or sin and just left there. But Yahweh was being specific about the specific sin that was going to haunt our children and our children's children. And that's why it is important to know that awon is based on awa, which is to pervert, to distort, to manipulate, and to twist. Christianity is a distortion of Yahweh's message, as is Judaism, as is Islam. And it is in turn from which is dishonest acts which are contrary to the standard. And it's also related to ul, which are corruptions which are fed to children, which is directly analogous to this statement when we talk about it meaning to pervert, to distort, to manipulate, and twist. And the consequence being our children and our children's children, this same, the root of this word, awon, is corruptions which are fed to children. Further, awon is related to...
The children part is interesting there.
Yeah. To Allah, which is a crime of unjustly harming and damaging others, as well as olam for all time. Now, it's the reason why Yahweh finally said in certain communities, you just need to get rid of these people from the promised land, because you reach a time when the twisting and manipulation, the perversity, the awom becomes so full, so complete, that there is no chance that any child born into that society will ever come to know him. And that's what we have done in the religion of Christianity. If you were born into a religious Christian family, a religious Jewish family, a religious Muslim family, an overtly religious secular humanist family, there's almost no chance. In some cases, there is absolutely no chance, and in most cases, there is almost no chance that you're ever going to know Yahweh. The consequence of our twisting and perverting his word is our children and our children's children.
Three to four generations, as he said. It's not a punishment.
No.
He's just saying this is the consequence
supporting
this type of crap.
Right. You know, the term that he used there is a mathematical term. You know, you do this, it equals this. This is the conclusion or the consequence, the result, if you will, of your action.
On yourself.
Yeah. Well, what he's saying here is that I'm less concerned that you're bringing it upon yourself than you should be in the fact that you're bringing it upon your children. You ought to care enough about your children not to do this to them, even if you don't care enough about yourself, is the message he's leaving here.